on today's show, we've got Nandi. And Nandi is currently producing some awesome content for entities like Backwell and Wordtaker, an award-winning production agency. She runs The Weekend Social, Johannesburg's much-loved monthly brunch party movement, Bloom, which is a bi-monthly conversation platform for women by women that seek to create a safe space for women to share and have meaningful conversations around their ambitions, relationships, mental and physical wellness. Fix It Diaries Brunch and Ride, which is a monthly ladies-only brunch and social ride. And Joho Moms, which is a parenting blog that features creative moms and sometimes dads around Joburg. So, wow, that is like a crazy bio. How do you channel all this energy into all these different things?
Well, firstly, that was 2017, Nandi.
So you've added more stuff. 2018, Nandi,
there's been some slight adjustments. Okay. So last year, I made the leap from doing a lot of what you mentioned as passion projects to full-time employment.
Okay.
So I left Thakwell and Wetika, which is TNW, the agency I was working for. I was business unit director there. And I mean, in parallel, I was doing all of this. And, you know, at some point, something had to give. I had to make some decisions about how I'd be spending my time in the future and what was worth spending my time on. So last year, mid-November, before my 35th birthday, I had my last day at TNW and I began my journey as an entrepreneur and building my own agency called Mama Gashaka. So feel free to ask me about that.
The name is very, very, very interesting. I mean, when I came across your social media profiles like a couple of years ago, I was very interested to know why Mama Gashaka. Like, what inspires that? Where does it come from?
So Mama Gashaka is my nickname. It's been my nickname since high school. And as most of us should know, Shaka Zulu's mother's name was Nandi. So it was just another way of saying Nandi. Mama Gashaka is like saying Nandi. And I started using it as my social media persona, and I used it as my handle across, you know, all platforms, simply because it's what my friends called me, and I embarked on those platforms to make more friends. So it made sense that, you know, call me what my friends currently call me. And that's where it started. And because my business is built around community and people, it also felt quite appropriate to, you know, move with the name and have it be the company name.
And what do you actually do at your agency?
I must tell you, I really hate that question. It is, there are very few questions, things, people, scenarios that have me like tongue-tied. That question, like, for real, like, I practice it. Like, I'm like, oh God, I'm going to an interview.
I feel like it's
they're gonna ask me this question. Let me just practice my response right now.
It makes me feel like that question when people ask you, tell me about yourself.
Yes, like, exactly. It's like, what do you mean?
Where do I start?
35 to 36 years just like crammed into like 1 to 3 polite sentences is a lot of pressure. But here goes. I'm gonna give it an attempt. So Mama Gashaka is a company, and we basically create content and experiences for brands that exist within the arts, culture, and lifestyle spaces. So this was really inspired by all the stuff that I had created prior to starting the company. And we have our brands and we have the agency side. Our brands is what we do for ourselves. So those are the properties that we've created for ourselves where we've seen gaps in the market. So properties like Feel Good Series, which is the monthly rooftop party. We have Bloom, which is the conversational platform for creative women and entrepreneurs. And I think by the time this podcast goes live, we would have launched our latest property, which is called Pantone Sundays. And those are our brands. And then we have the agency, which is what we do for others. And basically the scope of that, of the work we do in that section, like, varies from brief to brief. As an example, we're the agency for, we're one of the agencies for Art Logic.
Okay.
Art Logic owns, three of my favorite properties in the country. So it's really great that they're awesome. Actually a client. But they own the F&B Joburg Art Fair.
Okay.
They own the Winter Sculpture Fair. And they own the Sanlam Handmade Contemporary Fair.
Mm.
And we, and my agency, well, the agency side of Mama Kashaka basically designs the look and feel of the two fairs, Winter Sculpture Fair and Sanlam Handmade Contemporary Fair. We also do their social media strategy and community management. So we handle all their pages, inform the content, create the content, etc. for those two brands. And then there are other brands that we do different stuff for. So it always depends on what the job brief is. So in the agency side, we like to flex and experiment and play around. There's never a straight no. I always like to say, I'll think about it.
I love that everything that you're doing is focused around people, community, and impact. And a lot of entrepreneurs nowadays are starting businesses without purpose. They're starting businesses just because they want to be seen and they want fame and popularity. Why is impact and value so important to you?
Well, firstly, I'd be the first person to tell you that fame and popularity, you know, are nice things.
Well, they are.
They're nice things, but they can't be drivers.
Mm.
I think they are, they're like rewards that you'll get. So like, you know, if you, and fame is so relative as well, because I think fame, you need to, like, you could be really like famous in your community and the average Joe may never know about you.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like, there are like some really great and amazing people doing profound things, changing, you know, narratives, impacting mm-hmm. and changing lives that nobody knows about.
So then do you think there's a thin line between fame and influence?
Yeah. I think they're completely different. I don't even think there's a thin line.
Mm.
I think that, you know, you can be famous for something, but not influence, you know, decision or behavior. But if you're an influencer, and I mean that in the most purest, righteous way, the way in which the dictionary defines influence, which is, you know, like influencing behavior, you know, having an impact on people, influence in that sense. But back to your question, which was like creating businesses from purpose rather than fame, etc. And I think that's something that is informed by the individual. It just depends on what your personal journey or narrative is. I'm a highly introspective and spiritual person.
Mm.
I contemplate God, I contemplate God and on God a lot. I contemplate on what is my life's purpose? What am I, when I die and someone's reading out my eulogy, you know, like, how would I have made the lives of the people around me and if possible, the world a better place? So those are the questions that I often think about, and those questions have informed my identity, and my identity has informed my particular pursuit of happiness, which is to create meaningful and or fun experiences that bring people together, you know, to engage, connect, you know, and leave having been better for it or having enjoyed themselves on some level. Because enjoyment is part of happy.
True.
And I want to make people happy.
What do you think our role as content creators are? Especially in the African landscape where the digital curve is really just starting to boom and people are out there really looking for quality content. Where do you think us as Africans, what is our role? How do we drive that narrative?
You know, I don't want to be prescriptive because I do think that, you know, everyone has their own journey.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do think that people just need to be responsible. I think that, you know, when you, and I think responsibility, depending on who you are, also has a different weight. But I think that, you know, when I say responsible, it's like to consider your responsibility within your gender, your race, your geography. Mm-hmm. And I think if people just considered, you know, what, like, you know, how, like, what that means for them, no one would have to be prescriptive. I think we'll automatically align to, you know, create empowering narratives, whether they be racial, sexual, or geographical, if we just always consider responsibility.
On the note of sexual responsibility, knowing what the African landscape has been like, or just the general landscape in terms of business and female entrepreneurship, a lot of females were looked down upon and not given the opportunities that like males would get in the corporate space, in the creative space, and the entertainment space.
Yeah.
How are you changing that narrative?
I mean, I guess as I have like this like poem or prose, mm-hmm. and it was Marianne Williamson, and then like Nelson Mandela quoted it at a speech in his earlier years out of prison. But basically it's about, you know, as you, something along the lines of, as you let your own light shine, mm-hmm. you unwillingly or unwittingly give people permission to do the same. So I think when I strive, when I succeed,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a catalyst. I hope that it inspires other women. So I think on that very basic level, like by just being truthful to myself and my calling and like making sure that I succeed and I'm victorious, I think I do contribute to I suppose just like, you know, inspiring other women to do the same. I know having grown up on the age of like the Oprah Winfrey show, like she was a huge influence to me as to what you know, black people, black women could do,
mm-hmm.
and more importantly on like mission based like companies. Like I want to be rich. I mean, there's absolutely no shame.
We all want to be rich.
Yeah, no, I want to be.
Do you want 5 million though?
5 million is a little. 5 million is not a lot of money, guys. You know, I want to be the rich that doesn't have to consider what is in the bank account.
Mm.
I want to be able to travel at a moment's notice without having to consider anything other than time.
Mm.
I want to be able to afford my family, my son, and people that I love experiences, gifts and stuff, you know, and I don't have to think about it. I want what money gives, you know. I want what money gives. It's so hard because, you know, I often get people asking me to mentor them or they'd like to come into the company to intern. And I'm always like, and I want to make that kind of direct impact. I do, but I hesitate because I just feel like I'm also like quite early on in my journey.
Mm.
And mentoring like is a full on relationship. And I think you have to be ready to take on that relationship. And I suppose I hope that through my platform, Bloom, particularly, that I am helping to, by shining a spotlight on women who are achieving really great things within the community, that it, like, you know, it inspires other women to do the same. So I think that that's my strategy on helping to change the narrative
mm-hmm.
through inspiration. I mean, definitely in the future, I'd like to see if there's something more direct
mm-hmm.
that I could do, you know? Like, oh man, I daydream about having a foundation. I really do. I daydream about having a foundation, having like a cause, but that in itself needs
like
money.
One of the most beautiful things I've noticed about you, and I'm saying this because I'm also close with your life partner. Well, at least that's what he calls you. And it's because like from a personal experience, balancing entrepreneurship, especially when you're a startup or you're building something, and being in a beautiful commitment is really not the easiest thing. Because
yeah.
First of all, You're both out trying to make that money. You're both busy running up and down, trying to create things that impact people. How do you balance relationships with business?
I suppose all I can do is share my personal, you know, like account, and hopefully we can draw something from that. But I think timing is everything. By the time I met Hussein, and by the time he met me, the time we met each other, we were ready. So like I had just come out of, I just resigned. Oh, was I about to resign? Yes, I was about to resign from the Weekend Social. So that was 4 years of like, you know, like of a monthly party with like 3 to 5 other very strong, willed women. And I also just like, I just come on the back of, I were really like, kind of like imbalanced life where there was just like lots of partying, not enough time with like family, too much of everything. Just like I just closed the chapter of a life filled with excess. Like, you know, like I think life can be seen as in chapters. So chapter 9, Nandi closed, like in the last sentence, Nandi was like on somehow she was like finished. When we resumed chapter 10, I just met Hussein, and I and Hussein was going through something similar. And by the time we met each other, we were really in a period of like stillness and focus. Like I actually had come into that year when I met Hussein on some, I'm not going to get into a relationship. I am going to do X, Y, Z. I'm going to leave the Weekend Social. The back of leaving the Weekend Social, I'm going to do this for myself, blah, 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 blah. I don't have time for men or relationship. And that's how I entered, you know, the year I met Hussein. And yeah, I met him and we connected. It wasn't for me, like, obviously he is a very beautiful man. But for me, like, our connection came as a result of, like, you know, conversation. It was quite spiritual because of the timing of where we were in our lives, and then grew to quite like business like and career focus, because we're very similar in the sense that like Hussein's I Am Hussein is basically quite similar to Mama Kashaga. You know, I have Bloom, Hussein has Gentle Brothers. You know, we there's a lot of parallels between what we've sought to achieve for ourselves and our respective brands. And I think that helped. But more than anything, I do think that the timing of when we met really was like, it's all about when you meet someone, like, you know, to make that like connection. And I think since then, we've just gone from strength to strength. It's been hard on the both of us having, you know, being as ambitious as we both are, having as demanding jobs as we have. But, you know, the foundation was cemented before all this, you know, took place. And we're committed to growing with each other. And when I say committed to growing with each other, like, you know, love is easy. Relationships aren't. You know, relationships take commitment. Like, it takes, like, saying, yo, I'm going to stick this through, even when, because sometimes it's easier to walk away than to stay in something.
True.
But you have to see it through. And it has been incredibly worthwhile, like the meeting of these two minds and hearts and spirits. So yeah, like I was just, our timing was really like blessed, was like ordained. So I'm really grateful for that.
You mentioned a very interesting word, one word that I really enjoy when it comes to entrepreneurship and achieving what you really want, and that word is focus, you know?
Yeah.
It's not easy to create or to build things that actually change society and change the world if we don't have focus. What is like your process of creating experiences and creating impactful work? How do you go about it?
Ooh, jeez. just in terms of like creating impactful work, again, it's like on the individual, because it's what matters to me. So I will make time for it. It's what matters to me. So I'll make time for it.
Mm.
I will create things around the things that I'm passionate about and what I believe my purpose is. But I think just like on focus, I actually have been like going back and forth on it for a while. Like I have had a pretty good year for a startup.
Okay.
And I'm saying startup in inverted commas.
What's a pretty good year for a startup?
I think that that I was in a position that I won quite a number of the pitches,
mm-hmm.
that I had been invited to. So the fact that we went in like a week into starting the company, we had like a Ndalo Media pitch that we won, and then going into the year in the first like 2 to 3 months pitching for, you know, Sanlam Handmade and Winter Sculpture. So and that particular one was like a picture against, you know, other agencies that are like I completely like respect, who have been in the game for much longer than me, and to win. So like it was a very good start to the year. I started the year, like our financial year, with like 2 retainers.
Mm.
Well, 3. So like that was Beyond Feel Good Series and Bloom. So that was a good start.
on that note of pitching, what do you think? Let me just say this. Let me put it this way. Give us 3 key essentials to win a pitch. 3 tips of how you can go about putting a pitch together and actually winning it. Because I feel like as entrepreneurs, we all have brilliant ideas and concepts, but communicating that to the clients and actually pushing the client to say, yes, we want to buy in with this is the struggle.
I think, tip one, make sure it's within your lane, the thing that you're pitching for. So within your lane, in the sense that like make sure that you A, have the required skills, that the brief has requested. But also for me, it was like a level deeper where I also, like other people do it. I don't really particularly believe in punching too far up my, you know,
your numbers.
Yeah. Or weight. There's a boxing phrase, but like, but for as a really good example, when the Art Logic opportunity came up,
mm-hmm.
it was actually to pitch across all 3 of their brands.
Okay.
I chose not to pitch for the F&B, for the one job, because I was like, you know what? We don't know enough about the art world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we'll come up with an execution or creative that will do this particular fair justice. I chose not to pitch on that. And I said, and I felt that I knew enough about, you know, local design and artisans that mm-hmm. I could actually, that I had something to offer HMC. I felt that I knew enough in terms of, you know, what was required of the Winter Sculpture Fair in order to do that. So that's what I mean about like staying in your lane, like consider like, is this something that I can take on? Can mm-hmm. I bring an interesting and new perspective to it? Am I well-versed in this? Yeah. And I think there are times where you can, you know, choose things that are slightly out your lane. But I think, yeah, for me, that's something. Mm-hmm. Just know that this is something that you were meant to be. Like, you must read the brief and be like, this was written for me. Mm-hmm. This is perfect. And that's how I felt with the 2 of the 3 briefs. And then the second, when it comes to pitching, is I think listen to the brief. Having come from an agency background, I don't know how many times I have had like pitches come my way and people have just chosen to just not tick the boxes. I think you can always deliver over and above in your pitch or have alternatives and provide why you've gone this direction, but you have to answer the immediate needs of your client. And I think, and for me, it's whether you agree with them or not, it's not your job.
Yes, exactly.
It's not your job. You've been called to assist. But in the same breath, I think that sometimes as like as creatives, as like creative directors, as art directors, as conceptual thinkers, as strategists, sometimes we also need to look through and beyond the brief.
Mm.
Sometimes someone can come to you and say, hey, I want you to create X, Y, Z for me. And, you know, I think a well-versed like creative director is one that goes, cool, notes them, but then goes beyond and says, and tries to understand the objectives of why you've come out to these outputs so that they can say, oh, so that's what you're trying to achieve. And you've suggested these elements because you think that will, you know, get you there. However, in my 20 or 30 years of experience, I've seen that this could also do it. And then you're able to. And so I think it's always important to listen to the brief, adhere to it to some extent. But I also think that it's also important to, like, you know, see to see what perhaps your client doesn't themselves have the expertise to articulate.
Mm.
You know, sometimes clients like to solve things for you and you want to say, you want to solve it. You're like, no, I'm here to solve it for you. But I think that there's a very fine balance. So when I pitch, I try tick the boxes and I try see beyond the boxes and I try, and then I will provide a little bit extra.
Mm.
And then the third thing is, it's a secret thing. This is a secret thing. The third thing is, the truth of the matter is, it doesn't, more times than any, it doesn't, people want to work with people that they like.
True.
So the chemistry of you and your team matters. So when you are presenting, you know, the connection you have with your client while you're presenting, it matters. And then also the dynamics of you and your team, just from like how each of you are presenting. So for, like, for instance, when you like, when one person presents one section and another person presents another section, I'm like, for me, that's a commentary on your team dynamics as well.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and that could be the dynamic that, you know, a particular client like likes, or you have more like fluid presentations where people are speaking, you know, are tag teaming each other through each other. And it feels like it's a very cohesive team, you know, like, and I think sometimes people don't consider that when they're presenting. Whether you're going in alone or not by yourself, all these things are the like considerations. So those are some of my three tips and considerations. Wow.
The third one sounded like a very interesting secret because you were like, should I tell them?
Because honestly speaking, we like, I have been in situations where we weren't necessarily. And it happens across many different like combinations. A, there's situations where you weren't necessarily the best creative, and it happens. But the team dynamics were better, and the client was on some, I have a quick, the turnaround for this thing is ridiculous. I need to be working with a team or with people I feel like I can get along with, or blah, blah, blah. And you'll see, and that might trump, you know. And I mean, it always, the creative always matter. The strategy always matter. Don't get me wrong. You're not going to get the job if that stuff was shit. I'm saying that, you know, you group A may have come in with like, I could have done 100% on creative and strategy. And I could have come in and I could have done like 90% on each.
Mm-hmm.
But like the third thing, which was actually the final thing, the final consideration for that particular job or project was team dynamics. This team, the way that they talk, the way that they gel, makes me think that I can, this is the team that I can do this with in these turnarounds or whatever. So sometimes it's just like to understand and to try like, and really gauge what are going to be the, I suppose, deciding factors of winning that brief. It's different from job to job. I've had instances where we maybe didn't meet the brief, like we didn't answer the brief in terms of the objective, but the creative was so beautiful and like so, and like the elements were so amazing that the client was like, listen, I can tell you can do some pretty like cool shit and some, you can create beautiful work. You didn't answer my brief, but like, I'm still content to go with you. And then you end up while having the, while actually having gotten the job, redoing everything, but they really, they trust, your the creative capabilities of your team, because that's what really mattered to them there. Whereas someone else could get it, but maybe their elements weren't that well executed. Maybe they lacked an innovation. So it's just not that black and white. And I think that, yeah, you just, there's a lot of considerations to winning a pitch. Even me giving you three, it's like, yo, it's like three of like 20, 30, 40, 50, depending on the job, depending on the client, depending on so many other factors.
Just before we close off, I want you to actually just like, in terms of the African landscape and entrepreneurship, what are some of the challenges that you faced and how are you overcoming that through your work?
I think some of the challenges that we face is, you know, the value of our work. I think, and this is definitely not a new challenge as far as, you know, the as far as the creative community is concerned. It's the value of, you know, your ideas, the value of creative outputs. It's insane. It's like, you know, on one hand, someone's willing to pay like, you know, I don't know, like half a bar for a Nelson Magamo, but, you know, will freak out when you send them a quote for like, I suppose like a visual identity for like 100,000.
Why do you think that is?
I think a part of it is there's just some education, you know, part of what we still have to do in our quoting and when we're presenting our the money and the creative is like, is educate the client. But for me now, it's just come down to, I've simplified this just like for my personal sanity, where I tell people, you must understand that we are working on time. We're all time-based professions here. So however long it takes you, like, and that's the thing, like it's going to take the designer X amount of time to do this. So for me, then once I get them to understand that you are, you're not just buying the output, you're paying for time. And if I tell you this is how long it's going to take us, that is how long it's going to take us. If I tell you that is the rate of each person, then, you know, then you take the rate, you times by the hours, and, you know, we come out where we come out. It's not debatable. But I think in understanding the parts that, you know what, money, time is money. That's well, and I think everybody understands and respects that concept. And creative community, the same, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. I mean, sure, you're going to get some clients go, but why would that take you 8 hours? What is rendering?
You get a client that says, okay, cool, why are you guys charging me so much for a visual identity? Because, like, I feel as creatives, when, let's say, a client comes to us and says, I need a logo, and we charge that client 10 grand. And then, like, why is the logo 10 grand? Because,
I mean, also, if you're selling through one-line items, let's say 10 grand, there's a problem there in itself. And I think that, you know, having been in production for, like, I think for, like, 8 to 10 years, I have a certain way of thinking. So for me, it's, you know, everybody has their rate, their hourly rate, right? And the hourly rate is dependent on your weight, right? Whether you're a junior, mid, or a senior. And that's where you start, you know? So when I even get quotes, I look at the rate and I'll say to someone, oh, based on this rate, I assume you have X amount of years of experience. You know, and talent is great, but X amount of experience also matters. And I know that it can get a little bit difficult to balance the two in order to come out and say, okay, cool, I'm a middleweight or I'm a heavyweight. But let's just say, like, the everyone defines, you know, that based on years of experience. So from 0 to 5 years, give or take, you're a junior. You know, from like, you know, 6 to like maybe like, I don't know, 10 to 12 years, you're a mid, and then plus you are a senior. And then obviously the level of quality creative you are should have a determining factor on all those three things. And then if you tell me, listen, this is my rate, this is the things that I have to do in order to get to your logo.
Mm-hmm.
There's a research phase, there's conceptualizing, yes. There's like initial sketches and scamping, then there's like color variations, and then also people don't understand, it's not about, you don't, when you're working on a visual identity, you don't just deliver a logo, you deliver, mm-hmm. deliver the logo and its various applications. Mm-hmm. For you to have gotten to those applications, you needed to have tested them, so you need to be allowed time to test it. So, and I think sometimes when people quote with one line item and don't take people through the journey, mm-hmm. I love seeing a cost estimate that says, yo, conceptualization, mm-hmm. this, allows for two reverts. But like the more detail that you can put into a quote to educate people on our process, because that is also what you're paying for.
True.
You're paying for process and output,
mm-hmm.
you know? And like people just think of the output and they don't think or understand or are privy to the process. And I think that's where we let ourselves down.
Mm. Awesome. This has been a beautiful conversation. I wish it had gone forever because I've learned so much. I've really learned a lot. Thank you so much for coming. I really enjoyed this time. And that's been all for Pioneers vs. Pretenders. See you guys on the next episode.